Access number 30403, Andre Codin, Real 8. Right, now we've just got to the point where you join the field security branch for the intelligence corps in about September 44.
This is all
a bit vague. What were you doing with, what were your duties? Well,
what they did with us then, from there, we were sent. In the meantime, you got to remember the Americans had taken Paris, and they were on the Rhine, right? And the Scheif headquarters was near Paris, near Versailles. And you must also remember the judgment of the Western Allies was that the Germans were going to fight, you know, to the death. They didn't understand the German mentality, right? They expected them to fight like the Russians did against the Germans, right? Partisans and all the rest of it. You know, all the talk about the werewolves. Yeah, remember that? Oh no, you.
It's all right. I've heard of it.
You know the word werewolf. You know that they were going to be Germans. You know, with the. They're going to bite you even, you know. They're going to fight in the woods, in the streets, all the rest of it. And they were preparing for it. And they were thinking...
How were they preparing for it?
Well, I'll tell you, because they sent me on a course to Saint-Cloud. They were looking for blokes like me, you know, with linguistic abilities and army experience. And... they sent us on a course near Saint-Cloud, and they were thinking of building small sort of units, right, with half a dozen jeep or something, with Bren guns and bazookas and whatnot, and they were going to make a beeline for, shall we say, they were in front of a town, right, and they knew that the Gestapo headquarters was there. Right, or the SS headquarters was here. Now they were going to send these task forces. Right, they were trying to. They were thinking of forming these task forces. Right, to make these attacks on these important centers. And they took us there, and they. And I had to laugh because they gave us lectures on the whole structure of the Nazi Party, right? And the structure of the German army and the party organizations, etc. And well, quite honestly, I enjoyed it because when I got to Saint-Cloud and I reported to the American barracks there, and I walked in, and there was a he must have been a Texan because he drooled. He said, have some time. And he sent me to the kitchen, and I walked in there, and I was flabbergasted because we didn't know anything of that. There was the whole wall. They had rotary with chickens on them, right? And I stood there, mouth agape, you know, and the cook said, well, which one would you like? And I said, what? Which one? You know, I thought I was going to get a wing or something, you know. Which one would you like? He said, oh, this one is well done. And he, you know, they were on a sort of stuck on, what do you call them?
A spit.
On a spit, metal spit, and going round and round and round. And he picked that one out and he said, here, Alan! And came in. And I ate and ate and ate, quite honestly. I was sucking bones. You know, we had never seen a bloody sheep. We had spam and corned beef and. And We stayed there. I can't remember quite how long we stayed.
Do you remember what they were teaching you? They were teaching about these squads. What else were, and the lectures? What else were they teaching?
Well, they gave us all quite amazing, actually. They were all Yanks, and they gave us. I knew most of it, or thought I did sufficiently about the structure of the. The political structure of the German country, you know, the party, the police, the formations like the SS and the SA, and the German Wehrmacht, right? And it was quite amazing how thoroughly I sometimes wonder, do they want us to fight, or do we sit here for a PhD or something, you know? It was quite fantastic. But the food was fantastic. I can tell you that.
So how long were you on this course?
Several weeks we were there. And then we were sent back to Brussels. Right? In the meantime, the British troops had entered the German territory. It was after Arnhem and all the rest of it. And they were marching on to northern Germany. And into the northwest, in the Hanover area, you know.
So is this before or after they crossed the Rhine?
This is after they crossed.
So that's after March, 45.
And that's how it went. And I went to.
Now, what was your role during? I mean, you didn't stay back in Brussels, did you?
Pardon?
You didn't stay back in Brussels. What were you doing?
No, well, we were a field security unit, and we progressed with the advancing troops. And
so, what would you actually do as a field security unit when you see you moving through?
Well, we got prisoners, etc. We had to interrogate them, right?
Now, tell me about the interrogating. What methods did you use to interrogate the German prisoners?
Well, we just. We had been trained on that.
So what were the basic methods that we used at that point?
Well, the basic method was that, to their surprise, we were very polite to them. And that surprised them no end. And quite honestly, I was sometimes taken aback with a willingness with which they... But not in front of a fellow German prisoner. If you got them on your own, which we did, the willingness which they then communicated with you. But mostly the units that we came across, they couldn't tell us a great deal.
So you were that's interrogation. Any other things you were doing?
Well,
did you do this business of
towards the shortly before the end of the war?
Hang on, but did you do this business about having special task forces to capture the?
No,
that never happened.
That never, to my knowledge, it never materialized. It never materialized, to my knowledge.
So what were you doing instead then? So you were interviewing prisoners?
Yeah, well, we were dealing with prisoners. Right?
What else?
If we wanted some information, etc., you know, what we could get, we shepherded them, and also with the in the small towns, etc., also with the civil administration.
So you liaised, you helped liaise?
Yeah.
How'd you do that? I mean,
in some instances, we just had to find the right people and interpret between the British officers, the commanding officers, and the people concerned.
So just acting as interpreters.
Yeah.
What about this business about resistance movements and any trouble like that? Now there wasn't much, was there? But did you have to do anything about that?
Yeah. Well, we had to prepare for it, and we looked around, etc. I kept asking people, etc., you know, interrogating people about who was the SS commander and this and that. You know, we tried to trace these people in these villages, etc., you know, who was the party man and so on and so on. You know, you try to...
But there was no sign of it.
I didn't find it.
So how were you treated by the Germans, you know, that you were dealing with? Because, I mean, did they know you were Jewish? Did they, I mean, you were clearly German of one sort or another, or Polish, you know. How did they treat you? When you were interviewed?
Their Nazism was... it wasn't lost. It was there all the time.
In what way? Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, with all sorts of apologetic explanations and whatnot, you know. And also with a hidden hope, and also expressed sometimes in conversation, etc., that the war is not lost yet. The Führer has got a secret weapon. Right?
And did you know?
And not only that, there was also, they were aware of it. They were aware of it, or they spoke about it. Was that about? The likelihood or the certainty of fighting the Russians together. You know, when you came across an assessment of a higher rank, and you started, you know, the political anger came in, they came out with that. You know, with making a front and fighting the Russians. They are the real enemies.
Now, so anything happened before, you know, anything happened during, you know, you're moving through Germany, coming to the end of the war. Do you remember any particular instance before the VE Day?
Before what?
Before VE Day.
Oh, before VE Day?
Any stories you just remember?
Yes, I do, but it's not something very pleasant to talk about. On the 20th of April, 45, I was sent to a place called Belsen. Because the British troops had reached there 5 days before, and they were just confronted with this, what they found there, and also the impossibility of communicating with the people. Right? And I was sent there to help. And I never forget when I drove the jeep to the gates of Belsen, I pulled up like mad because the gates, and there were the mounds of bodies, one beside the other. Right? And in various stages of decomposition, undressed, and the bodies that lay on top of the heap. And if they laid on their back, and you looked closer, they had no eyeballs. The birds had picked at all that. And the impossible, speechless. And I didn't know if family, friend of mine were under that. And I experienced something there which I always remember. and about 45 years afterwards, that incident came back to my mind.
Now tell me what the incident was.
Well, the incident was that whilst I stood there beside my Jeep, speechless, a Jeep drove up and three British officers came out. I heard them speak. They were a few yards away from me. Then I turned around and I was transfixed actually by one of the officers, because his face, there was in his eyes, they were exuding such a sense of sadness, and I can only say sadness. The dark, large eyes, and he had his hands on his hips, and he was looking, and I was transfixed by the way he looked. And then the two other officers retreated, and one went into the Jeep, and the other one called out to him, "Come on, Dirk, haven't you had enough?" And that man didn't move. And they kept calling to him. And then one of the officers took a handkerchief out, held it to his nose, and I heard him say that. He said, "I never knew there were so many stinking fucking Jews." Got into the Jeep and called again to this other officer. That other officer finally turned around, walked back to the Jeep, but on the way back, I was looking at him. He turned around and stood and looked again. And I'll never forget his face. Now, in the 50s, after I left the army, I took my wife to a cinema and we saw a film. I cannot remember the name of the film. And the camera closed in on one of the faces, one of the actors. And I jumped up spontaneously. I said, "That's him! That's him!" And my wife called out, my wife was Greek. Yeah? And she called out to me in Greek, "Don't be mad. Sit down. Put me down." And afterwards, I told her about it, and she wouldn't believe it. She said, "You're dreaming. You're just imagining things." And then, about 30 years later, I was next door reading a paper, and I do not remember which paper it was. I cut out the article, and I jumped up and did the same thing. And I said, "Here, Eva, you called me mad, remember? Here, there's the proof." Because there was a review there of three books written by survivors of the Holocaust. And here, these three books were reviewed, and the reviewer started off by describing the scene which I just described to you. And then do you know who it was? Dirk Bogarde. You know the actor? Yeah?
And it was him that with the sympathetic eyes.
Yes. And he wrote the review of the three books and he described the scene, but he did not mention that remark of that British officer. Then he reviewed the book, and then he also remarked on something else. He told a story of something else. and I wrote to him. Right? Because he wasn't sure about the date. He said it was on the 17th or 18th of April. It wasn't. It was the 20th, because I remembered it. The very date, the 20th of April, is the birthday of the Führer. And to me, it was this monstrosity of the situation. This is the birthday of the monster that caused that. Right? And I wrote to him, putting him right on the date, and then asked him if he did not remember the remark of that officer, because he must have heard it, because Dirk Bogart stood about 4 yards away from me. If I heard it, he must have heard it. But he didn't mention it. And then also, at the end of his article, he told the story that he had a young Austrian couple who were his butler and domestic servant, right? And they were with him 11 years, I think he said. I'll show it to you. 11 years. And then they found a better job in the USA, which itself makes me, you know, wanting to talk to him about it, right? How can people who are with you 11 years leave you for a so-called better job in the USA? And he took him by train to Southampton to get on a boat. And on the way, they got into a train, and all of a sudden, as they got into the train, one of the departments, there were two rabbis sitting there. And this Austrian, and he referred to them, a lovely Viennese couple, yeah? They were like family. And that young Austrian, this lovely man, went into there and he spat at these two rabbis, who hadn't said a word to him. Now, he mentioned that incident without a further remark. And in my letter to him, I asked him, I put him right on the date, and then I asked him if he didn't hear that officer's remark. And then I said, what was your reaction? Did you just let it pass? Or were you... How can you, with people whom you're together 11 years, like family, how can you not have guessed or felt the true nature and character of these people? I never got a reply, and I found out later that he had died. He was living in a homosexual relationship with a chap he called his secretary or something. And this man obviously did not reply. And I don't know if I ever got the correct address. It was an address on the Riviera in France.
Now, what were you actually doing at the camp? You'd gone to the camp.
I was supposed to help speak to these people, tell them.
Now, did you do it? Did you speak to them?
Yes, obviously.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, it's a most distressing thing.
In what way?
You just can't describe it. You cannot describe it. You cannot make somebody else feel what I felt. Because you must remember, I did not know what happened to my family, my friends. I only found that out in 1945, in November. And there they were. I made the acquaintance of a doctor from Budapest who was like a father to me. You know, he spoke to me, he tried to talk to me, etc. And but it's a horror. It's a horror. And I didn't stay there very long either. I was sent back.
Now, what did you do in the last few days of the war before VE Day? Because it's only a week or so then, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, nothing. We were just we got into a place near Hanover, and we occupied a barracks there, and stayed there till, as it happened, the very first British troops that the Russians let into Berlin, I was amongst them. The British troops of Berlin.
Now, is that after or before VE Day?
Oh, that's after.
Yeah. So what do you remember of VE Day?
Pardon?
What do you remember of VE Day?
Oh, VE Day? Oh, see, no, that was... When was VE Day? In August?
8th of May.
Pardon?
8th of May.
No, that was after VE Day, after the end of the war.
So what happened on VE Day?
Nothing. I was in Belsen at the time. I'd got there on the 20th of April. I stayed there for several weeks.
Ah, because you just said you were only there a matter of hours. Pardon? I thought you were only there a matter of hours.
No. I was there for several weeks. Till after the end of the war.
So anything else happened? Right, so you moved to Hanover Barracks much later.
I came back to the unit and we moved into barracks near Hanover. And... then, when the British troops were admitted to Berlin by the Russians, I was sent to Berlin. And I stayed there with the field security.
Still with the field security?
Yes. I can show you the house that we took over. I've got a picture. Where? Let me show that quickly to you.
It's no point. They won't be able to see it. Whereabouts
I want you to see it.
I'll look later, yeah. Whereabouts in Berlin was it?
In the British sector of Berlin was in the west end of Berlin, and Spandau, and the area near the Wannsee, the northern part of the Wannsee, or the central part of the Wannsee, which is a big lake in the west of Berlin.
Now, what did you think of the state of Berlin?
Well, I can show you a picture there too. It was in utterly devastated, utterly complete. As a matter of fact, and I want you to know that, if you ever come across it again, that I was the originator of it, there in Berlin, and it was shown throughout the world in various papers and publications. There is a whole street utterly wrecked, you know, like the bomb damage in London was under the Blitz, even worse than that. And there you see in great big white letters written in German, Hitler needed 13 years to produce this, because Hitler, when he took power, right, in the 30s, he had a great big speech in Nuremberg at a rally, and he said, so that you get an idea, because he spoke with an Austrian accent, so he couldn't deny that. He said, "Gib mir 10 Jahre Zeit, und ich werde Deutschland nicht wiedererkennen." It means, give me 10 years' time, and you will not recognize Germany again. Well, it took him 13 years, from 12 years, from 1933 to 1945. And I had that written on there, on the thing. And 2 days later, I came past there, and the bloody street was full with photographers. They were taking photos of it. And what happened was that the Russians made propaganda that this was done by... because they were already building up, you know, the good Germans, the socialist Germans, right? That the anti-Nazi Germans had done that, right? No, they didn't. You know who did it? a German policeman whom I had called over, because opposite that place was one of the only intact buildings. It had been the headquarters of an insurance company, and it was taken over by the British military police as a head office, right? And I had an office in there, because we used an office in there if we wanted to interrogate somebody where we didn't want them to know where our unit was living, right? So we used an office in the British military police headquarters and to do our interrogation. And I called over, and they had a German policeman as a guard outside, you know, because Germans came, civilians, and they could deal with them. And they were just painting parking squares in the yard, and there were pots of white paint. And I called him over, and I said, "Fritz, come over." And he came over, and I said, "Take a pot of paint and a brush." Took a pot of paint, and there is a ladder. And he took a ladder, and I said, "Now get up there, and I'll tell you what you're going to write." And I told him what to write, and he wrote it in great big letters.
In English or German?
No, in German, in great big letters. He repeated word for word what Hitler said, only instead of saying, "Give me 10 years' time," right? I referred to the 12 years, the actual time from 1933 to 1945.
Did anyone ever know it was that was you?
No, but yeah, in my unit, in the section, they knew it. I told them about it.